Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. In this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report.
Yes.
That's my favorite yet, because we've had this ongoing thing where you make the fun news noise, but that was like you were a Muppet on the Muppet Show who remembered at the last minute, like, damn it, I got to make that noise. Fine, here you go, Kermit.
That and it just feels apropos.
Yes, as many podcasts have been saying for quite a long time now, but it always changes. We're recording in difficult times. The exact nature of the difficult times seems to evolve and then sometimes not evolve. But the point is, we are acknowledging we are recording a podcast in difficult times. But for the sake of just, continuing to have some consistency and some joy and some thoughtfulness in our lives, we're going to plug on with talking about a 12-year-old show, The Clone Wars.
When you say it that way, it's even more needed. Yes, absolutely. A big episode, big arc, and ready to, I don't know what, distraction's not even the word I choose to use, just continue part of living.
Yeah, no, it is. I think right now and really for the last several, you know what, I'm not even going to quantify it. A long time now, it just feels like the emotional equivalent of, you know, eating, drinking, sleeping, going to the bathroom, all at the same time, always. It's just everything always.
Talking Star Wars.
Talking Star Wars. Everything always. But you know what? Let's talk some Star Wars instead of just making gross visual metaphors. Let's dive into the beauty that is Star Wars. This is the end of season one. Chronologically, there's one more actual episode that was released in season one, but chronologically, it doesn't go there. We're going to talk about it in a while. For now, we're talking about what is the chronological climax of season one, the Ryloth arc. The episodes are Storm Over Ryloth, which is season one, episode 19, written by George Christick, directed by Brian Kalin O'Connell. Then The Innocence of Ryloth, season one, episode 20, written by Henry Gilroy, directed by Justin Ridge, and Liberty on Ryloth, season one, episode 21, written by Henry Gilroy, directed by Rob Coleman. So that's really interesting to see that especially these last two episodes are one of the heavy hitters of Clone Wars, huh?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I love, you know, I just never... Rob Coleman, knowing his role in the prequels and all that kind of stuff makes sense. But we had him, you know, he's directed one of the previous episodes. But just knowing that, I didn't know he had his hand in this as well in terms of directing and everything. And I just really like learning that, something I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah, it is one of the great things of Star Wars, right? The actual lore in universe is deep, and the lore of the people who worked on it is just as deep. And it's so weird that every time it comes up, I'm like, yeah, Coleman Trabor directed this episode. And I have to step back and go, no, Rob Coleman, the human being. Who, you know, anyway, you know. Let's get into the summary so we can get into the episode. Here is the summary of the arc. Invasion. Despite the best efforts of poor doomed Jedi Knight Amagun Dai, Ryloth has been fully occupied by separatist forces led by the greedy and vile Wat Tambor. In a desperate bid to help the suffering Twi'lek people, the Jedi and the Republic stage a daring counter-invasion to liberate Ryloth. First, Anakin Skywalker and his Padawan Ahsoka Tano must break through Muk Tur's separatist blockade. Then, Obi-Wan and his clones must defeat the devious tactical droid TX-20 to free Twi'lek prisoners and secure a landing zone for Republic troops. Finally, Jedi Master Mace Windu relentlessly pursues negotiations with and without a lightsaber to take the capital, capture Wat Tambor, and free Ryloth for now.
For now.
For now. An ominous ending. An ominous ending to the summary, but what are you going to do? It's right there.
And what the truth is what the truth is. Yeah, and great, yeah, great use of just kind of reminding us, too, that we've seen the prelude to this arc that, was a great episode on its own right with I'm Gonna Die. So, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, it's in my love list. Listeners know I'm keeping a list of which episodes I love. That's the supply lines. It's got some great stuff with the Toydarians and with Bail and Jar Jar and I'm Gonna Die. And I think this is one of the times where watching in the chronological order really starts to pay off, because we have already developed that relationship where the Republic's kind of trying to help on Ryloth, but it's not a full effort and it's not going great.
Yeah. The chronological thing, I think I've stopped mentioning, but it was really just kind of just a lot of fun, because it's something I hadn't really done before. And this, like I said, I think it's one of the first big, aha, this is why it works and feels good to watch this way. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'll take anything that's, aha, that's why it feels good. So speaking of feeling good, or maybe not feeling good, what was your overall reaction to this 3-episode arc? Did you love it, like it, struggle with it?
I love this arc, man. I consider this the first great arc to me. And I don't want to take anything away from anything we've seen before. The Malevolence arc, the Jedi Crash arc and everything. I great stuff, too. But this is the one that kind of it has a legacy to it, or at least it's one of those ones that's talked about at long after the show's done. Of like, oh, yeah, the Ryloth arc, you know, capital R, capital A, the Ryloth arc. And I just, yeah, I think it is a way for a reason. There's a lot of great action that we're going to talk about. And to me, because of that, this is like how maybe I envisioned the Clone Wars being. And not necessarily as a kid, because that was probably something really weird and 49 Boba Fett's running around or something different. You know what I mean? Like, or as I get older, and even maybe during the prequel era, of just like, oh, we didn't get to see the Clone Wars. This is what I would have thought they would have been like. Just the action, the look, the feel, what was going on. Big themes aside, just on paper, like, hey, look at that. It's the Clone Wars.
Yeah, yeah. Two thoughts. One of my actual visceral reactions while watching the Clone Wars, in particular the later season, once we get into Mandalore, I actually was like, oh my God, 49 Boba Fetts. This is amazing. So that's a great summary of one of my moments of like, no, this is amazing. Clone Wars is the greatest. But yeah, I had a similar thought of almost every time there's big action, I'm like, yeah, this is great that Lucas and Filoni, but Lucas in particular, since he made the prequels, is really getting to do what he wanted to do. And I think there's something about this arc, I think, because it's a complete sort of step-by-step tale of this military attempt to liberate a planet, that it's got that scale, it's got all these individual battles, and it's got the theme. So it really is like, this is, we see different kinds of storytelling within the Clone Wars, from political to, you know, suspense to kind of one-on-one combat to little tales, but this is grand campaign of war with the, you know, absolute adventure and, you know, bizarre creatures and machinery and the cool aesthetic of watching the conflict and with all the big themes. So it really does feel like the Clone Wars, as you said, capital C, capital W, the big time.
Yeah, like it's had, like it has its own theme song. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I think for myself, I would put the arc in like really like it and has a lot of specific beats and specific ideas that I really love. And I think one of my favorite things about it is telling this whole planetary liberation story in three separate steps. Like this is one of those things where watching it with a little bit more of a critical eye to do these podcast is really helping, because I think as I've watched it before, I'm like, yeah, no, this is the Ryloth arc, and it's a great episode where Ahsoka learns some stuff. Oh, this is the one with Numa. Oh, this is the one with Mace. But then really looking at it, that it is not only really broken down by tactics of we have to, you know, smash through the blockade to even land. Oh, we can only land partially because we need this safe landing area. So that's what this second episode is about. Now, the third one is there's a campaign going on. In order to end it, we need to take the capital. It's this great step-by-step way to make this huge idea of liberate an entire planet and break it down into sections. And then on top of that, just realizing how much it's broken down by Jedi.
Really is, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that made it really compelling and interesting to watch. And it's also, I think, it's got a ton of great action. And then the other thing about this that makes me really like it is so important not only to the Clone Wars, but important to lots of future storytelling because of the of Ryloth and specific Twi'leks being kind of centered. Not that we won't meet other people who suffer during different wars, but the Twi'leks are really centered as this very specific planet, this very specific people who are constantly caught up in all of the wars of the Skywalker saga. You know, not only do they appear again in Rebels, it's the Lords of the Sith novel is all Ryloth. And then, of course, Resistance Reborn, we go back to Ryloth. So this arc is really the beginning of centering Ryloth as this one specific people, this one specific planet that we can see the cycle of war through their eyes.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't really. Yeah, yeah. When you kind of say it that way, yeah, the way that Ryloth and Twi'leks and everything are positioned, this is maybe for many of us an introduction to them as an actual culture and a planet world, right? I mean, if you're watching in release order, you're not, you know, Ula, you know, Bib Fortuna, you know, Orn Freetown, maybe, you know, it's like you haven't spent much time. And so that sets them up going forward. And I love that. And I love the Anakin Ahsoka stuff too. And add some weight to what's going to happen to them as well. But great point about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a great point too of yours of like, they have a couple different characters who represent them, from Ula, who is, you know, doesn't seem like that was probably a life choice that she made. She's being, you know, held by Boba, and Bib doesn't seem, or by Jabba, and, you know, Bib doesn't seem like the greatest guy. Orn Freeta, the little bit you see him in the movie, seems like a criticism of politicians. And then it's pretty great to kind of shatter that, like, hey, remember, just because you saw one alien who was a bounty hunter, or one alien who was a crappy politician, that doesn't mean who the whole species is. And this arc really starts to redefine I think now when we think of Twi'lex, we think of Hera, we think of Cham, we think of Yendor, and we think of that whole species very differently, and that starts here.
Yeah, that's a great, yeah, there's no denying that, there's just no denying that Twi'lex, particularly, you know, female Twi'lex, Ula's where it all begins, definitely, I don't know, I'll just get kind of a little sexualized in Star Wars.
Absolutely.
And look, gorgeous creatures, right? Cool, great. But yeah, this really goes a long way to reframe that conversation, reframe that view of them. And that has added value because that leads to a great character like Hera, who is, you know, overalls on and ready for war. And not that she doesn't have a complete, fully functional life and desires and needs and all those things there. But it changed the conversation, changed the way you look at it. And I think that made possible because of this arc to me.
Yeah, yeah. And it just, as we watch the Clone Wars, it's just, it's cool to see again and again, like, hey, you know, Rodians, you know, Greedo, you know, the jokes about shooting first. No, here's this whole planet and culture. You know, same thing with Doidarians and Watto. And like, it's cool to just see it happen again and again, that all of the aliens that we've met, we are introduced to their actual culture and viewpoint, which is, I think, is cool. Move on to the morals of the episode. We got three episodes. So we got three morals. The first one is, it is a rough road that leads to the height of greatness. The second is, the costs of war can never truly be accounted for. And the third is, compromise is a virtue to be cultivated, not a weakness to be despised. So which of those landed with you? Which of those do you feel like represents the arc as a whole? What are your thoughts?
Wow, our arc as a whole, that scared me right there. That scared me. I think the one that I think spoke to me the most in this rewatch, I will say, is perhaps Ahsoka and the lessons of failure, because there's some great teaching thing. And remember, you know, for whatever reason, I've been highlighting the coaching storyline. Right. And I guess it's just who I am. So this one, just, I thought,
I kind of just want to do another rewatch of Clone Wars where you put it through a different filter, because I love that this whole Clone Wars rewatch is through the baseball coach filter. And like, maybe if we watch, do this again and it's through the radio DJ filter, we'll get some.
I'll have a clipboard and a whistle and some polyester double knit shorts and I'll go through this. So that one spoke to me, but I got to tell you, I like all of them. The third one, the compromise one, made me think a lot. I went to bed thinking, I went to bed late at the, you know, a lot of us were up late, you know, watching the news. It just, the idea of what that term, what that word compromise really means. And that, so this, maybe it's of the time, but this episode, I don't know if it spoke to me, but it was very present.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that it is a rough road that leads to heights of greatness. That's one of those nice, almost like, maybe this matches with your baseball coach, a little bit of tough love, kind of like, hey, kid, you got to remember, if you want to achieve something, you're going to go through some difficulty and some challenge and some pain to do it. And the episode is so crystal clear about Ahsoka having to go through some hard things and getting good mentorship from Anakin, and, you know, Anakin learning a little bit from her. So I think that one is really solid, rock solid, nice and inspiring. Put it on the board of Clone Wars inspiration. The cost of war can never truly be accounted for. We'll talk about this more when we get into themes. That one really resonated with me, because I thought, even with all of the other themes that are going on in the episodes and are reflected by these other morals, that felt like, to me, that's what I left thinking about emotionally when I finished the whole arc of, like, of how much that was underlined and emphasized. And we can talk about that more. But the compromise thing was also really powerful. It's something I bring up a lot when we're talking Star Wars, because I'm fascinated with Star Wars' relationship to it, where I think Star Wars is a whole, its morality is always about empathy, listen, try to understand, try to, you know, meet people halfway if you can, question your point of view. I think Star Wars absolutely preaches those things, and I really believe in those things. But then Star Wars also has some storytelling where it says, but then there are certain actions or beliefs that we can't support. Like, we can have empathy for why Anakin fell. We can have empathy for why Ben fell. We can have the hope for redemption and the effort to turn them back to the light. but there's never any part of Star Wars where I feel like it says like, so it's cool that you slaughtered a lot of people, you know? And this episode is fascinating for that, where it is so much about compromise, where Mace really knows that he needs Jam Syndulla's help, and he is willing to find any way to compromise to make that happen. He gets the compromise to happen between Jam and Oren Frita, even though they really have differences, that they have this common goal. So there is a lot of empathy, listen, look at what the bigger problem is and work together to fix it. But then at the end, when Wat Tambor, who is clearly bad, bombs innocent villages and then can't escape in time because he's too greedy and he wants to finish pillaging the cultural valuables of the Twi'lek people. When he's like, hey, you want to compromise? And Mace like, not when I hold all the cards. No.
Yeah.
So we get this. We get what the moral tells us, which is this big Star Wars thing that, yes, empathy, compromise, listening first. But then we do also get an example of somebody who in the story is kind of, you know, there's no argument that Wat Tambor is bad. And Mace is like, no, why would I? And I think that was fascinating for me to see.
Yeah, because that's very clear for Mace, right? It is a exclamation point on the end of this episode and speaks to those lessons you're talking about. And Cham Syndulla he's a great character to explore this idea of compromise. He needs the Republic, Republic needs them, but he never, Cham Syndulla does not strike me as someone, and look, he and Hera had some issues, right? So Cham at times maybe could be stubborn to a fault as a parental figure, whatever you want to say. And I like that about him. I like that he is a little complicated. But this idea, he's never going to sacrifice certain lines. You're right. They're clear. His, you cross this, we're not working together type of vibe is there. And he's kind of Oren Frita. You and I can talk down the line about how right is he about Oren Frita? Probably a lot. But to finish this up here, sorry, I'm kind of rambling. But this just made me think, I think, you know, we're so obsessed with competition at times. And look, you've brought this up before. You brought this stuff up here. And particularly when we were talking about the Jedi Temple Challenge and some of your kind of personal beliefs on hey, some kind of how this competition can run wild. And I am a dedicated, passionate sports fan who believes in athletics, who believe you can learn a lot about it there. But I too worry about how that obsession with it, with competition, boils over and outside the stadiums.
Yeah.
So because of that, this word, I'm thinking that word compromise to me sounds like defeat, right? To me, like in interpreting, because it is so always referred to as, well, you're going to have to give up and lose some points, look at in the moral weakness, is used as a reminder. So to me, the compromise should be viewed as a strength. They call it a virtue. And I want to kind of reframe the conversation. This is way outside of Star Wars. But also, and how that also there's faith, hope, trust that is involved with all this that can be broken. And that, you know, which is, I think, goes to what Mace is saying. Anyways, I don't know if that makes sense, Joseph. I went to bed literally thinking about this episode.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think that's why it is really, really valuable. And I think for me, my thing with competition, like, yeah, with sports, you know, I've played a little bit myself. I've never been a huge sports guy, but I do know, you know, people who absolutely love them. And the thing I always hear is the joy is in challenging yourself. The joy is in building teamwork with the other people. And I think those things are all great values. I think, you know, there's sports, but then there's also reality television, and then, you know, there's social media fights. And I think the thing I worry about with competition is I want us all to be able to challenge ourselves to excel. And I worry about the times where we don't feel like we won unless we beat someone, right? Like if I set a writing challenge for myself to say, I'm going to write a script in 20 days, I want to just be able to do that and go, yeah, I did that. I don't want to have to be in a challenge with three other people to see who can finish first in order to feel like I won. because I beat someone else. And I think that's what I've been giving a lot of thought to competition and how it dovetails into your great thoughts about compromise is by definition, you don't have to beat someone else to win. And I think having that as a value allows you to see compromise not as weakness, but to see it as, hey, I got here's 7 things that are important to me. These 2 I can't move on. These mm-hmm. 3, these other 2 I can really live on. These other 3 are like, I wouldn't like to, but I can't. And I feel like that's what's happening in this episode with Cham and Orn Frita, right? Like, there are some things that he would never agree to.
Yep.
But it is about this immediate problem. And so their ability to compromise helps people. And, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it more, but yeah, Ryloth gets trapped in this cycle of you know, violence and invasion and occupation and all these things. But there's no doubt from these episodes that Cham being willing to go, I'm not just going to be entirely rigid. I'm going to, you know, try to meet Orn Frita halfway because I need to right now. That saves people's lives, right? That mm-hmm. saves Twi'lek lives. That saves Numa's life, who we just spent a bunch of time with, you know, and that is valuable.
Yeah. Well said. I'm glad you, I felt like I slightly put your beliefs on the spotlight.
That's fine.
No. I'm glad, because you've said some very valuable stuff that really is someone to me who's grown up on fields of play totally agrees with. And how I think the inability to shut that off, the inability of you know, he with the most toy wins and those kind of bumper sticker stuff that grew up, that we kind of grew up seeing on cars, quite frankly, you know, it's a problem. And even my own mind, like, you know, even in my own house, my own domestic life, that word compromise sure does feel like a loss to me, when really that's not. You are literally building strength and building a stronger foundation. And again, which is, that's in a general term. And that's why, that's again, going back to how I even started this train of thought. I look at Syndulla, I look at Cham, and I go, he's a great example of this, because he is the least compromised individual in this story arc, right? He is so just sure of what he wants and what he needs. He reminds me of, you know, a character like Mance Rayder or something. I will not bend. I'm doing it for my freedom, choice, all those kind of valuable things. And he's always going to be working towards that. And so he's a strong character, and Mace is a strong personality and everything. So anyways, I don't know. I'm rambling. I also want people to hear me, to hear you. Like, I really think you're right about that, those kind of views. And I see it because of Star Wars. I see it because of Obi-Wan saying there's all alternatives to fighting. You can't win, all those kind of things. And Star Wars this arc to make me go to bed, literally thinking, what is my relationship to that word compromise?
Yeah.
I think it's tremendously valuable.
No, I really like you bringing it back to the heart of that moral, because I think that is a really important moral. It doesn't, you know, the moral isn't saying always compromise, always meet people halfway, no matter what. It says compromise is a virtue to be cultivated, which also I think has got this great, great nuance and emotional wisdom to it of work on it. You know, because maybe it isn't our natural instinct, but work on it and figure out what ideals you can't move on and what ideals you can say, well, what if I met you halfway on this one, and hope that you can build something together and build something stronger. I think that's all profound. On that note of compromise, hadn't thought about it. It was a beat I liked, but it's a fun version of compromise where Cham, you know, is and his freedom fighters are obviously hiding out, and, you know, their things aren't going great. But then when Mace arrives, he's like, I'm still going to offer you food and drink, as is our custom. Like, even though I don't have supplies. And in fact, we watched a whole episode called Supply Lines about how few supplies I have.
Yeah.
I'm not going to compromise on this part of my tradition. Twi'leks offer their guests refreshment.
Good tradition.
Yeah. Solid tradition, I think. All right. We talked about some of these themes already here, but for you, mm-hmm. Those are just the morals. Now we're going to talk about the actual content of the episodes. for you, what were the big ideas at stake in this arc? I mean, I think individual episodes definitely had their big ideas. So I'm interested to hear if there were individual themes to the individual episodes or big picture stuff for you.
There was a lot. First of all, in this section, I don't even know if it's appropriate for this section, but you mentioned earlier, I wrote, reminder that the separatists are bad.
Yep. Big reminders. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We can go down to a micro level on our Mina Bonteris, but yes, Wat Tambor, not good. So there's some things I focused again on episode 119. This theme of recovering from failure, hard lessons, but it is a recovery. Ahsoka's move, we're going to talk about her tactics, but also talk, it's a theme of being bold and the rewards from being bold. But I think it's very powerful recovering from failure, acknowledging that what it is. And Anakin is so good as a teacher. You described it as tough love. And that's not sometimes needed, sometimes not needed, but he, it's really, there is love there. There is guidance. There is not like you lost, end of sentence. It's like, yeah, you lost. Here's why you can't. Here's why I know you know that. And here's why you're going to succeed right now again. I think it's pretty valuable recovering from failure. Going again to Last Jedi, it's clearly a theme in Star Wars. And I do believe it is the best teacher.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is such a great moment for Anakin where he, you know, he opens the door for her to go through, you know, herself and just says, you know, yeah, it was you made some bad calls, but also it's a war and you are going to lose people no matter what. And it was a trap. But yeah, you also made some mistakes. And also so deal with that. But also, we're going to keep going. So not only am I going to have you come up with the next plan, I have constructed it. So I will be totally defenseless and my life will be in your hands. Like, what a great way to be both also like tough love and also look at how much trust I have in you. Look at how much I believe in you, that I'm literally putting my life in your hands.
Yeah, I mean, that's faith, man. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, good Anakin episode for that.
It really was. And Anakin, I talk about the relationship with Anakin and Ahsoka, just they work so well together, great relationship, great banter, and it really does add some weight to what's going on later on with the stuff we get 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, so for myself, for this arc, I really felt, like I was saying when we were talking about the morals, that the big theme was the cost of war, because even though there are individual lessons about Ahsoka and Anakin and growing and learning and mentorship, and then in the third episode, there is a lot about compromise and all these great themes, but that's what I just emotionally felt. I think partially because the way the episodes were constructed, like we kick off right away with, Ahsoka's gonna take on her first mission and she's a little nervous, and then we learn the names of all the clones in the squadron, and I'm like, they're all gonna die. I'm being told their names, so I feel worse when they die, so I know that Ahsoka knows them, and that really got me all right away into the, like, oh man, this is about, you know, war is costly. Yularen gets injured, which part of it is, I'm sure, shaping his general dislike of Jedi. Yeah. But we've spent time with him. We know Ahsoka spent time with him, so that hits us in the gut. That conversation we just talked about with Anakin and Ahsoka saying, "Hey, it's a war, and you know you're gonna lose people no matter what." And Anakin, I think, has that great moment where he's like, I'm never going to stop being bold and just trying to blow things up, but you're right. I should, I could come up with a better plan. In fact, one that only risks myself. And he really puts, a pin in that and says, hey, you're right. I'm going to learn from you too, kid. And I'm not just going to go flying at it. I'm going to go flying at it alone. Yeah. So I risk fewer people. All that is in the first episode. And then I think in the second episode, the suffering of the Twi'leks is right there on the surface, being used as human shields to protect those anti-aircraft cannons. I think the majority of the episode, a big part of the episode, is Numa really humanizing the war. You know, we get that set up by the clone Waxer kind of dismissively saying, I wish the tailheads would get out of our way. and not make it, you know, more difficult for us to save them. So it's really kind of cold and distant. And then Numa really opening up Waxer's and I believe Boyle's heart and giving a face to the war that you can imagine maybe these clones never really saw before, because it's just tactics and droids and terrain. And is this one of the first times we're really seeing a human face in a, you know, a innocent, charming face like Numa's? And then the third episode, in terms of this theme of cost of war, we really get to see big picture the invasion's damage to the Twi'lek people. The bombing of the villages is awful, but this is one of those moments to really drill down on. It's easy to just ignore that, you know, Count Dooku said some bad things, but exactly what he said is, you know, even though we're going to lose Ryloth, we can get a political victory. We can get a messaging victory. If we bomb those villages and a bunch of innocent people die, I can use that in propaganda to show how destructive the Republic is making everything. I mean, in just not only the death, but the utter cruelty of it, of I can spin it to make a, you know, a political argument in that sphere of the war. And then Wat Tambor is robbing their valuables, but especially putting that in connection with things that we learn in Rebels, we know the valuables are like their cultural history, right? They're not just like ore. He's stealing their culture. And from the rest of the whole storytelling in Star Wars, we know that this episode is setting up the beginning of a cycle of occupation that this whole planet is going to endure. So that theme, because it has so many viewpoints, from the loss of the clones to the real one-on-one humanization of the Twi'leks from Numa, to the big picture, what all is being lost, what all is being taken from the Twi'leks, the whole big picture of cost of war is just really powerful to me.
It builds very well. It builds very well to the end there. And it definitely, you said it's three parts Jedi, but it's one full, it truly is an arc. And I'm impressed the way it builds up. And in the second episode, just, like you said, Numa represents the face of those affected, and have the clones, you know, the line, was it Boyle that said, if we're here to free the tailheads, the least they can do is get out of our way. That's really easy to see, to say from a distance, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That's really easy to say. And it's so important. It's important in Star Wars, important in real life to be down on the ground amongst those, you know, that you're living with, working with, fighting for, and who are affected maybe when you're not, and you're dealing with your own, war is tough on the clones, clearly. And they want to win and they want to get things done. And no one's going to take that away from even the clones in this moment, but man, that changes when they're down on the ground, and how that builds into the third episode so well for me, of maybe even the lesson of compromise, because you mentioned even up top, compromise has value and strength, because now you are working to save people like Numa, you know, that you would not have known from afar. So anyways, it all builds nicely.
Yeah. And I love that moment where they realize that maybe Numa thinks they're droids because they've got the armor on. Like, that's such a great, you know, putting a point on the, like, yeah, the clones are organic and flowing, and we learn that, but Attack of the Clones has that shot of menace because all these soldiers in matching armor represents this, you know, rigidity. And I love it when they're like, take the helmets off and like, see, you know, I believe he says flesh and blood, just like you. And they make that connection over, you know, they're different, but they're the same, is really beautiful.
Yep. Simple. And you and I talk, you know, a lot of these Star Wars lessons are right there. They're right there.
Yeah. I got one other kind of big overarching theme, but how about you? What other thoughts do you have?
Maybe littler ones, supplemental themes, B themes, if you will. I don't know. I just talk about Ahsoka's move, just representing being bold to me, and thinking outside the box and going to something different. It's a tactic that was from Heir to the Empire with Thrawn. And I believe Thrawn brings it back later on. I can't remember. I apologize. Someone will correct me, but I know
he does.
Because I think I remember having this conversation relating it back to this Clone Wars episode of something Thrawn did, but then also remembering that this one goes back to Heir to the Empire, and Filoni and team wanted to put that in there. And there is a clip of Filoni talking about it out there in some of the StarWars.com stuff.
Oh, cool.
But it, But to me, it's just, I love being bold, and it leads to being approaching things differently in a way you hadn't done before. It's exciting. It's thrilling. It's creative. But what does that do? Look at the next episode. TX20 just cannot compute so many things. Pretty simple theme. Twi'lek interactions. He could not, all his stats and figures, all his exit polls could not let him figure out that two clones would run into Numa and change the way they view it, or that Obi-Wan speaks the language here.
Yeah.
Powerful stuff. And hey, point for Obi-Wan there.
Yeah, no, this was a good one for racking up some good points for Obi-Wan, because he definitely makes some mistakes.
yeah. So those are some of my other underlying themes as well.
Oh, those are great. I think the other thing for me is, because these three episodes were connected, but so clearly each one featuring a Jedi, Anakin and Ahsoka in the first one, then really Obi-Wan in the second, and then Mace Windu in the third. We get that a lot in Clone Wars, where like, oh, this episode is suddenly, hey, let's spend some time with Kit Fisto. But because they were all a part of a whole arc, it almost felt like that was a part of it, was to look at the way different Jedi handled things. And that was that popped even more for me, because in the first two episodes, there's that real emphasis on strategy, and the Separatists look Anakin and Obi-Wan up, which I really, really like, to say, like, you know, not only to show the development of the war, that they're beginning to figure out the strategy of the different Jedi, and they have, you know, files on them. That's just kind of fun canon lore. But it also really makes you think, like, well, what's on that list? Like, they talk about it a little bit, but, you know, I really like that in the first episode, there was, as you were talking about, this emphasis on being bold. That they know Anakin, from looking up his file, is unconventional, and that he won't give up, right? Tuck Moore, that Separatist, is really, really focused on. He is not going to give up, and he's going to keep coming. And we're reminded of what we know about Anakin, that he is prone to running straight at something and trying to blow it up with superior skill. And Rex having his back. And then we see that Ahsoka has inherited those traits, where she's like, not going to stop going. I know it. I can get it. I can cut through and I can blow everything up. And then she learns those costs and learns that it is good to still be bold, but you also do have to plan a little bit more. So we get this great picture of Anakin and Ahsoka learning from one another. Like, you know, it is our strength to be bold and unconventional and really charging ahead to blow things up. But we also have to, you know, plan. And then the second episode, TX20 looks up Kenobi, he's known for his deceptive maneuvers, which is just perfect Kenobi, perfect, right? That's a perfect a certain point of view. That's a perfect negotiator guy. That's a perfect sit down with Dexter Jetster and debate philosophy kind of character. And then we get to see, I think this first season of Clone Wars, we've been seeing it a lot, that contrast with Anakin. Where Obi-Wan comes into a situation, he really seeks information. He really wants knowledge first before he takes any rash action. He's really open to creative solutions, to resources that present themselves, like the Gutker beasts or, Numa's knowledge. And then we also just kind of get to see that he does really care about prioritizing lives. He's got that great line of, we came to aid the Twi'leks, not destroy their homes. And like you said, that great turning point where he knows the actual language, and all of it gets to that point of like, yep, deceptive maneuvers. Yeah, but there's also creativity, open to the moment, really cares about people. So we get that picture of Kenobi. And then, Mace Windu, they didn't download a file, but by this point, I'm really paying attention to, like, how is Mace Windu different? And that episode is amazing to just, the one word for Mace Windu is relentless, right? He just keeps charging at things, both sort of politically and action wise, and he's really clear, and he says, I'm going to follow my need to help people over politics. I'm not going to be distracted by any of that. I'm just helping people. That's what I'm here to do. And I am absolutely doing it. He's really relentless about getting Jam Syndulla and Orn Freetah to work together. Really relentless in his physical action to do what he can to take that planet back. Just relentless. His quote is, I'll leave the politics to you, Senator. I'm going to do whatever I can to help these people. So I thought that was really cool to just see three episodes right in a row, bam, 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 that show you the similarities, but the differences between these Jedi heroes.
Yeah, yeah, the real good Mace stuff. Mace is often a Jedi under fire, right? He does some things and has done some things, but this is not just an action, but who he is. I felt I got to spend some real quality time with Mace I haven't spent in other places of Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah, and I think this is a real good celebration of Mace with some room for criticism as well.
Make no mistake. But
yeah. How did you feel like the individual themes in the episodes translated to larger themes or ideas in Star Wars?
I think to sum up some of it, and this maybe even more present in the third episode, but there's an idea of teamwork, an idea of democracy. I think Cham has a line about, I have to trust democracy. I didn't write it down. I remember he said something. And it's not an easy thing that he said. He's not like, well, this will be fun. He just has to trust in that and how valuable that is. And that is something that's important in Star Wars, as we'll see in Revenge of the Sith. True freedom is something there that to me rolls forward into things we see. You know, what Cham is fighting for the people of Ryloth is something that, I don't know, Infus Nest is fighting for, that the rebellion overall, some of the affected, specifically and maybe more harshly affected planets, Ewoks even down the line. And then survival and how a lot of this is about getting to the next day, getting to the next moment, even when there's failures. I think those are all present in these stories and present in Star Wars.
Yeah, I think that's a really great observation. There's so much of Lucas's storytelling that is anti large organization, or not even anti, but you know, cautious about, like, a yeah. super large organization can become rigid over time and can fail in its own mission. You know, we see that with the Republic, we see that with the Jedi, we see that with the Empire, you know, and the contrast to that is often, you know, a small organic band of people who have not, you know, don't have sort of a incrustation of time and politics on their organization, and so they can really stay true to fighting what they believe in. And I think these episodes really do support that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For myself, the greed, the just like, let me be entirely unsubtle and clear about it with Wat Tambor, the writers, I imagine, saying of that he literally gets left behind because he's not done stealing from the Twi'leks. You know, it's just, there's nothing subtle about, that's part of what Lucas is saying about the dark side, is that need to always have more is a part of what his kind of philosophical view of the dark side is, and what Star Wars view of it is. And in Orn Fritah's general corruption, we don't get into it too much, but I think just in the way that Orn Fritah is portrayed, you get that, just that kind of picture of that guy who doesn't really have a great backbone, isn't really standing up for the people, and more wants to protect his standing as a in power as a politician. So I think we get that a little bit there. I also just thought that all three of them combined to really support the Star Wars theme of generational storytelling. The first episode is so explicitly about Anakin mentoring Ahsoka and her growing and from these adventures. And then we're spending so much time with Numa, who is, you know, the literal future of the Twi'leks, and we'll meet her again in Rebels. And then this whole arc being, this is just the beginning of Ryloth's struggles, has all got this real sense of generational, this sense of not only learning from the previous generation, but these sort of cycles of war.
Yeah. The generational thing, that the good call on that, too. Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, and then my final thing. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I don't have much to add on that. Other
okay. My final thing, because I just am obsessed, as you know, is monitoring the justice for the Jedi and how much things crumble over the course of the war. I really do like that this is an arc about Ryloth is suffering and the Jedi are really trying to help. Like, you can see how the Jedi would be saying, yeah, no, this is a campaign we really want to fight because they are suffering and we need to, you know, defend them. We need to go help them. And I think Mace, this is is the point where I think there's some interesting sort of criticism for Mace, or hints at problems. Mace is so sure of himself and so sure of the sort of purity of his beliefs and his intent as a Jedi that he can't really see that that the Jedi's close ties to the Republic might eventually be a problem. And I think it's so powerful that Cham Syndulla sees that and says, you know, I'll accept your help now, you know, and I'll help you because I think I have to. But I really worry if, you know, you're going to leave any troops behind, how long until I'm fighting you, Master Jedi? Mm-hmm. You know, and Mace kind of looks thoughtful about it, but it's easy to see from his perspective of like, well, yeah, that's not what the Jedi are about. The Jedi aren't going to do that. But I think he isn't fully accepting how far the Republic itself is slipping. And of course, from Syndulla's perspective, the Republic very quickly turns into the Empire, and he's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's not the Jedi he's fighting, but that, yes, the occupation never ends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So 100%. Justice for the Jedi with a little hint of future failures.
There you go. That's fair.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to discuss some of the fun action comedy and all the great parts of the Clone Wars.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to jennylanda.com. That's JENILANDA.com for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as Jennifer Landa 1138.
And we are back to finish our discussion of the great Season 1 Ryloth arc of the Clone Wars. Ken, did you have any favorite action moments?
Oh, let me count the ways. yes. Overall, particularly in the first episode, we get some great Star Wars space pew-pew-pew. and I talked about Ahsoka's maneuver. I really do like it. I mean, it's a Y-wing moment, so there you go. I like that specifically. But overall, just again, going back to what I was saying about this, kind of has that feel of what I would have thought and or predicted or guessed. If we were doing a podcast in 2008 and we were guessing, speculating responsibly about a coming Clone Wars animated show, this, I probably have been like, cool space battles and then stuff on the ground. Yeah, that sounds general and specific, or general, not specific, but you know, the specific moments in here just have that feel. And then, so there's overall that. I love Ahsoka's move. A lot of Mace stuff. This is where, like, you know, cool stuff that he's doing. And who doesn't like Jedi doing cool stuff? The stuff on Ryloth, the landing on Ryloth and ground action. To me, this is why we all love the Battlefront games. You know, I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do on a video game form.
Yeah,
hide behind trees and shoot and hit to the ground. Like, that's kind of that. Scratches that itch of the kid in the playground playing army, if you know what I mean. So yeah, I like that stuff.
Oh yeah, that's really great. Yeah, the Obi-Wan and clones landing really does feel like a video game mission. We're like, yeah, okay, what's my mission? Oh, I got to take out those anti-aircraft cannons. All right,
yeah.
Let me find the young Twilight kid. If it's more of a role playing video game,
right?
Yeah, I'm with you. I loved all the different kinds of action. I love the Y-Wings. When Ahsoka's initial attack fails, there's some glorious shots of her and all the Republic ships, the V-Wings, I believe. And then there's that scene of all the Vulture droids just pelting down on the Republic cruisers, which is just kind of horrifying, I liked it as an action moment, was also terrified by it. Couple of great Obi-Wan moments. I love it whenever they use the Force a little bit more creatively. So I liked him using the Force to help the clones throw the droid poppers, and that, a great electric crackle as the B1 droids go down. I liked them. That was another just moment of cruelty of starving the beasts on Ryloth, the Gutkers, so that they would want to eat people. And I love that weird Force moment where Obi-Wan kind of reaches out with the Force and there's a slightly different sound effect. It isn't quite like moments we've seen before where Jedi is reaching out to calm them. It's almost like he's, you know, like it's like Force flute. It's like he's luring them.
Force flute.
It's like he's just making this like weird eat me vibration. So they all come near him.
Yeah. That's when you press R1 and double tap square and then move to the left and you get it. Force flute.
You get Force flute. But it was just such a great, like, let's look at this from a different perspective. I could hack them apart, but I will lure them all into a ravine and and yell at the clones to blow up the bridge. It's a great, great moment for Obi-Wan. The other moment I really liked it when the Twi'leks were saved, and instead of running to freedom, they're like, this tactical droid has to die. And there's even the one punching DX-20 in the face.
Oh gosh. Yeah. So I actually put this in my favorite whimsy moments because I was so amused by it in a brutal way. It's like the High Septim being torn apart by the folks at Flea Bottom. You're so right. The punching of it. I'm like, that's got to hurt, but it's got to be worth it.
It's got to be worth it. And I love that Obi-Wan tries to cover Numa's eyes and she's like, no, I want to watch. Pushes his hand away. Like, I will watch this. Last big action moment for me. I'm going all out here. I think this might be one of the best action moments in Clone Wars. And that is Mace's bridge cross. Like, I always remember when I watched that episode, like, there's that plasma bridge and there's something doesn't Mace do something I really like? And I forget that he does a bunch of cool Jedi stuff, a bunch of Mace's very, you know, brutally powerful with the Force stuff. But it's the way the scene is constructed. It has, you know, we're familiar with the general, I'm using the Force, and there's this slight ethereal whooshing noise. But this is like even lower and like even more rumbly. And it's like, that's what it sounds like when Mace uses the Force. But like all the other music drops out, practically all the other sounds drop out. He does all those cool leaps. But then the way it's just cut where he lands on that ship, the little the speeder, and just stares down that battle droid. And it's, we know this already, that Mace stares at things before he ends them. But combined with everything else dropping out, that low ethereal rumble, like that's part of where I got that sense of like, that's who he is. He's just relentless. It feels like, hey, battle droid, I'm letting you know that I am going to use and destroy you to relentlessly get to my objective. But I also want you to know I could just destroy you with my will. It's so powerful. Just the leaps, the glares, the precision, and then the button at the end of like, oh, and by the way, these two troopers who are, you know, in danger of falling to their death, you come up here too.
Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah, no, the Mace stuff, again, big moments for Mace. That sound, yeah, you're right, that sound stood out. And I hadn't seen this arc in a while, and I kind of just pulled in even closer, leaned a little closer into my TV, like, oh, wow. So good on you, Mace, you faults and all.
Yeah, it was a great one. Made me want to see even more Mace action. So let's move on to moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness. What do you got?
Well, I guess I can't list TX-20 being ripped apart here. I already used it up above. Now, look, Yularen has a great line. Did you train her not to follow orders? I just, the grown 10. And then just, you know, I don't believe Yularen really knows Vader's Anakin. But just if he did, I would just love to have those moments on the Death Star if he's in those meetings. You know, just like, I always hated you. But all right. Yeah, I don't know. There's a moment in the first episode where the droids get a moment to take command of the ship. There's all around. There's one of them in the chair.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You and I always kind of track the plight of the droids. And there's many in this arc where it's like, oh, poor little droids. The one that's on the bridge who doesn't know how to turn around, doesn't hear to turn around.
He's got a classic what the, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, it's your moment in the sun. You got it. You got control of a ship, little lowly droid. And, it didn't go well. You mentioned already, but, Kenobi being known for his deceptive maneuvers, had to write that down. That's great. The Easter egg of the Ark of the Covenant being carried out. Good connection, whimsy. And you just got Twi'leks on top of it. That's what one of the pieces of art that Watt Tambor's trying to take is in the Indiana Jones mark. I love that.
Oh, that's great.
And then I'm sure you probably listen too, but this is one of the best of just the droid saying that's an older model droid and we're independent thinkers. And then Roger. I mean, that's just high comedy.
That was great comedy. And it starts with this weird moment of kind of similarity between the droids and the clones. So like they pick up that older droid head and it's not just that they know that it is an older model. He's like, this is RB551, and I took that as an individual, not the actual like model of this whole generation. So just like the clones, they know one another. But yeah, then following up with that, great, we're independent thinkers. Roger. It's great. Yeah, there's some fun moments. I like the what the with the plasma bridge, classic B1 humor. There's some moments of just more kind of like whimsy in the first episode. The lead clone acts, and the ships are V19 Torrents. Nice. I was close with V-Wing, but V-19 Torrents. But he at one point says, come on, you whiners, let's get dirty. Yeah. It just cracked me up because like that sounds like just good sort of like we're going into battle tough guy talk. But at the same time, it's like, what does let's get dirty mean?
Let's get dirty.
Yeah. I really like the B-1 who just says, Roger, download his file about Obi-Wan. Partially because it's like it works for space fantasy, but it also sounds so earthbound of like bring him up on LinkedIn.
Yeah. No, it's like, what are the files? I imagine like some of like the old G.I. Joe ones. It's got like a photo you know, of who they are, and then some key stats. You know,
yeah,
I want one.
Lied to General Loathsome about having tea. Yeah,
likes tea.
Likes tea, but it's a lie. Another Obi-Wan moment, which was I really liked because we don't always hear the clone perspective on Jedi. Like we do, but not that relationship with their powers. And when Obi-Wan is doing that weird force flute and luring those beasts in, there's one clone who goes, "Incredible." And then I believe it's Cody who says, "Quiet, rookie." And it was a fun little moment because it's just this great little picture of like, yeah, younger clones are seeing that the Jedi aren't just the lightsabers. Sometimes they can do stuff that's like, how the hell did they do that? And then the older guys were just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He did a weird thing and then a big flip. That's what he does.
That's what he does.
That's what he does. Yeah, so those are my favorite comedy, whimsy, weirdness moments, which means we are on to talking about canon lore connections to other stories. So what did you notice? What did you enjoy here?
Some little things along the way for me. I'm sure you and I have similar moments. Anakin appearing on the circular monitors inside the Trade Federation ships.
Yep.
I love that there. The Arval Crynid A-Wing homage there to even having Yularen saying, "It's too late." The ghost of Piet hangs over that scene. You're an Obi-Wan guy. Cody always handing Obi-Wan his lightsaber. That's pretty cool. What, you like that one? I'm sure you like that.
I wrote it down and then a sad face because it's so great, but it's so like, hey, remember where this is all going? Like, oh
yeah, yeah. I just like, I'm sure they joked about that at some point. You know, I'm always handing you your lightsaber, Obi.
Yeah, it starts to build up this thing where like Obi-Wan is okay dropping it because he knows Cody's going to pick it up for him. That's horrible.
Oh, that's sad. That's sad. Blurgs, Hera, even though it's not actually Hera, you know, it just knowing that Cham's daughter is involved in the story is cool.
Yeah.
And then final stuff, bigger stuff to me. I mentioned enough of it already, but Cham Syndulla, it's interesting because, you know, you read the notes of this and they were going to go originally that the idea was for him to kind of be a liar and lie and turn on the Ryloth people, and just in the process of telling the story that they realized that just didn't work for them. And I think what a great choice. And the Force was at work there because he is complicated. And I don't say complicated like he, you know, does bad things and everything. It's just it's a complicated galaxy. And he understands this idea of compromise. And sometimes he's a little tough. And sometimes he's, you know, again, we end up getting the knowledge that his relationship with Hera wasn't the best. And that factors in greatly to some of the rebel storytelling, which is powerful storytelling. And that doesn't make him a bad guy. It doesn't make his leadership bad or his tactics bad. It just makes him real. And he's a passionate fighter. He's so principled. His convictions and are strong. And I just really like him as a character and glad we have him, as someone who, you know, the freedom to choose. It's all he wants for his people, the true freedom. And I think that's great.
Yeah, I love everything that's done with his introduction. He's a great character. I love that Palpatine straight up calls him, you know, he's a radical. So Palpatine's already got his eye on the kind of person who he knows is not going to be broken by fear or propaganda or, you know, the normal tactics. So Palpatine's already like that guy's a problem. And Palpatine's right. I like that he was a political rival to Orn Frita. So you get that great just straight up contest of Syndulla's a little bit more Twi'lek of the people, you know, mm-hmm. and he sees that Orn Frita is a little bit of a climber, which sets up really well, I think, what the debate ends up being between Cham and Hera, right? That Hera really wanted to see the battle, the rebellion is for the whole galaxy, and Cham just wanted to stay focused on Ryloth, right?
Yeah, yeah. Generally speaking, yeah, and begs a reevaluation or a rewatch too. It's powerful stuff, and to be able to take it from these episodes and build on that, that's what I love about this modern era Star Wars storytelling.
Yeah, yeah, and all these other characters, Numa and Gobi, all make returns as well, which is all real fascinating stuff. So a ton of connection to other stories there. I like seeing R7A7, Ahsoka's droid, who pops up at other significant moments. and I believe is the droid in the current Jedi action figure set.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Because they have those weird, I think the Legacy, I can't remember what they're called, those sets where they're like, clearly like, we'll put a droid in it and we will find obscure droids so we can repaint it and make it a unique droid. So that's great. I like Numa having a Tuca Cat squeaky doll, the Tuca Cat in general, and then that actual doll, that toy of it, has a long legacy now. Going all the way into, I think, actual physical Galaxy's Edge. That was cool to see.
Right, yeah.
I had Cody handing Obi-Wan his lightsaber, which did bum me out and also thrill me at the same time. Thrill bummed. And Blurgs, of course. And then my last one was, I believe this is the moment in that's referenced in the novel Lords of the Sith when Vader is going to Ryloth and he has that flash to, you know, the Jedi floating above it in an escape pod, you know?
Yes, that's right. You're right. Oh, yeah. Lords of the Sith, put that on your read list or your rewatch list, kids.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's got to go high on our reread because I think you and I both read it long before we were doing, reviews, discussions on Force Center. So maybe that is worth a review, you know, in our copious free time, you know.
Yes.
Because there aren't 1,000 Star Wars books coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there anything in this episode that you disliked or questioned?
No, that seems like the easy answer, right? No, this is, I just really, really do love this arc. It scratches that, part of me that does love just, pew, pew, pew and shoot 'em ups. And then it very easily and nicely, and poignantly transitions into bigger themes that are very present. So no, there's no plot things there, anything, the stuff with Mace leads to better, one more wonderful discussions about the Jedi in the prequel era. So no, I'm on board with these episodes being, near perfect for what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think these were really, really good episodes. I think they, you know, just as viewers of a thing called Star Wars, they gave us the thrill of lots of cool action moments in a way that's only Star Wars is set up to deliver in a certain way. But by the time you add up the space battles and the, you know, the knights with laser swords and the riding weird beasts, it's really thrilling. It's really exciting. And it takes its time to say, man, here is the utter tragedy of war from lots of perspective. But then look at how all these people are, you know, growing and changing and, you know, trying their best to make really great human choices within all of this horror as well. It's a big, complicated package that's really fun and thrilling to watch. I think the only thing that is not even a criticism, it's just a particularly nerdy desire. I so enjoyed that they physically looked up Anakin and Obi-Wan's IMDb page of being a Jedi that I really wished Wat Tambor in the third episode had said, it's Mace Windu who's losing the charge. Pull him up on the screen.
Yeah,
I would have liked that. If he had to tune his dial to get the file of Mace Windu, that would have been fun. Awesome. Is there anything that we have not talked about in these episodes that you would like to discuss?
I will say Captain Martuk, as you said, Nemoidian in the beginning there, he's an interesting character. And in reading the notes, too, he was going to die. They were going to kill him off. And then they added in that scene of him kind of almost comically sneaking away. You all wait here. And he pops out and I do believe shows back up at some other point. I believe they tried to use him again. That was that they even said in the notes that it was George kind of like, we got something here with this guy. So he's almost, I mean, put in quotations, almost Thrawn-like to me. He's not as, you know, not as a deep baby and not as, I don't know, Thrawn. I still view Thrawn as a bad guy, but you know what I mean? Like, took his bad, no doubts there. But his idea, the studying of Anakin, and then also having the pride, being so focused. I want Anakin to know it's me. Doesn't even consider Ahsoka or any other Jedi. That's part of the reason he loses. But just the idea of preaching patience and all those kind of things. It again, Thrawn-like and Thrawn-light maybe at times. Just an interesting character, especially so far of what we've seen in the Clone Wars outside of named villains that we knew going into the series. But to introduce this character, Lock Dirt, I love too and everything. But he's I could see more and more. I could see storytelling getting more in depth with him if they wanted to. But they, you know, I don't think they really did. But anyways, I thought he was an interesting character.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great observation. And he is different because he is a little bit of a he expands the Nemodian storytelling, right? Because we get a lot of characters who are either cowards or really, you know, social political climbers like Locke Dird. It's fascinating that this first season that they're like, wait, well, we got Asajj Ventress, we got Count Dooku, we got General Grievous, but then it also seems to be like a little bit of exploration of like, do we need more villains? So, you know, we've got Locke Dird surviving, we've got this guy, Martuk. There was at least one other villain we discussed recently who was survived and was a possibility of returning again. He's like, it does seem like they were, yeah, you know, seeding villains for the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a few of them, yeah. And some get referenced elsewhere too, but yeah, I like this. Enjoy having him in the story.
Good character. Yeah, yeah. The only other thing that I wanted to touch on is that, again, like a lot of these Clone Wars episodes, we are reminded of the organic versus the mechanical, with the beast, the Gutkers, being tortured in such a, you know, sort of a dehumanizing, even though they're Gutkers, de-Gutkerizing away. Yes. And then that little thread about, hey, the Blurgs are faster than your little walkers, your AT-RTs.
Yes. Yes.
That's some Blurg. Great Blurg. Yeah. Yeah. Putting the Blurgs over, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you could have any an action figure of any character from these episodes, who would you choose?
This is kind of a sincere choice. I looked it up just to make sure. I saw some customs. I didn't see the actual one. And you and I have been ranking figures left and right on Star Wars Ranked. And definitely don't recall. Give me a Numa figure with a little Tuca cat doll and whatever. I think she's a... There's a lot there with that character and such great value. And I would like that.
Nice, nice. We've got a similar choice. I really love that visual toward the end when Obi-Wan is holding her. He's got a lightsaber in one hand and Numa's kind of got that, like, you're not going to mess with us glare. And I would love a three pack that's Obi-Wan holding Numa and then Numa holding her Tuca doll.
There you go. I like that.
A beautiful one. So next up, this is kind of a programming note for us. This is the first season of the Clone Wars that we've concluded discussing. We're going to take a break while we are having Mandalorian Season 2, while we have the glory of Mandalorian Season 2 to review, doing two of these kind of longer form deep dive reviews a week is a lot. So we're going to press pause on the Clone Wars until the season two of Mandalorian is over. And then we're going to dive into season two. And as soon as season two starts, Ken, we're going to have a treat because we've got Holocron Heist, Cargo of Doom, Children of the Force, all just fascinating deep stuff, yeah, with Cad Bane.
I can't wait. And yeah, it's valuable and necessary to kind of pause because it's great to, hey, we're going to review an episode and we got Bombad Jedi and I can watch that a couple times over breakfast. To sit down with three episodes and watch them two and a half times, kind of almost each, you know, Joseph and I aren't the busiest humans in the world and there's bigger problems, but we want to be able to focus on the episodes as best we can to really do this deep dive. So a little breather, but we're going to come back. I can't wait to finally tackle Cad Bane here on Force Center.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this so much. So we will definitely be back and can't wait to dive into the Cad Bane of it all. Ken, what do you think the moral of this episode of our podcast should be?
When the schedule of life is at conflict with your podcast, it's okay to compromise and work for a stronger tomorrow.
That's really good. That's going up on the moral board, too. do you want to tell people where they can find us?
Absolutely. You can follow us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, like our page there, Force Center Podcast. We are on YouTube, putting rebroadcasts of the podcast up. Yeah, no visuals, but, you get to hear us, and some of you prefer listening on YouTube, and more content coming to YouTube as well. You can subscribe over there. Podcasts available in a lot of different spots, including Anchor, iHeartMedia, or iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music now, if you want to take in your podcast over there. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can also go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter, get an audiobook on us, maybe get Lords of the Sith, get it on us, and support the show. Give it a listen. And then you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/ForceCenter. And also, hey, just tell a friend, a Star Wars loving friend, about what we do here at Force Center. We appreciate that too. You can follow me at Ken Napzok or go to KenNapzok.com for all the information on the other things that do.
Joseph. That is great. Yes, all good stuff. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures. So for now, for myself, for Ken, for Numa, and for the relentless glare of Mace Windu, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.